This is Peter.
And this is Tom.
And you're listening to History Teachers Talking Podcast.
Now part of the Evergreen Podcast Network.
All right, this is Peter Zablocki and Thomas Reska, and welcome back to our podcast. All right, Tom, what do we got today?
Well, today we're going to be going and doing a bit of a deep dive into some, most notably three of the most famous conquistadors of all time from basically the 16th century. And you have to remember that during this time in the 16th century, Spain and Portugal, they're the two dominant powers. You only think of that nowadays. But, you know, they sent their ships to all corners of the globe, exploring new lands, meeting new groups of people. They really discovered civilizations unknown to Europeans, and they brought back a lot of these goods back to Europe, which then created even more curiosity about these far-off lands, right, all throughout Europe. And they were driven by a lot of things. A lot of times you hear, like, God and glory, which is part of it, but really the main G, but you hear gold, but the main G was really greed. So it wasn't just gold, it was any way to make money. And their desire to basically get rich a lot of times made them get very violent, let's say.
Exactly.
These explorers, these conquistadors evolved from explorers to soldiers. And they were basically there to enforce Spain and Portugal's desires across the rest of the world, particularly the Western Hemisphere.
Yeah. I mean, it really kind of starts in 1490s, right? In 1492, Christopher Columbus, right, sails the ocean blue. He winds up founding the early
Spanish. Don't say that. I hate that thing.
Oh, really? That's how I learned it.
False.
Christopher Columbus winds up founding the earliest Spanish settlement in the Americas on the islands of Hispaniola, right?
Yeah.
And Cuba. So within a generation, sir, you have Spain, as you mentioned, really lands in the Americas and grows that empire that is started by Columbus in 1490s.
He wasn't really a conquistador because
because the term wasn't really used yet.
Wasn't really used, but he did towards the end become very, very vicious, right?
Yeah, like, and he did search for gold and other
things. He searched for gold and other things, and he wanted to, you know, subjugate people. He wrote how easy it would be to subjugate the natives. I'm not getting so much into Columbus here, but I know his tactics were so brutal that the king and queen were like, you know what, we're not going to send them back, like, towards the end. But that's a whole different podcast.
That's a different podcast. So the term conquistador has its origins in the Spanish language, obviously. It derives from the Spanish verb conquistar, which actually means to conquer, which is why I mentioned before that Columbus wasn't a conquistador because he didn't really go to conquer per se. At least that wasn't the original intent. Versus these particular people, these conquistadors, specifically refer to a person that engaged in conquest. And this was
on behalf of Spain and Portugal. That's what they're going for. They're going to, they already know what's there. Now they want what's there for themselves. That's basically what they're doing.
Yep. And they're doing this in a 15th, 16th, a little bit of 17th century. Most of these conquistadors are soldiers. They're explorers. They're adventurers. You know, they are trying to find new lands, but really it's about resources and riches and trying to make a name for themselves and a rise in social class. They're often authorized and supported, obviously, by the Spanish and Portuguese crowns, because that's kind of what you needed to be given permission to go to the New World to do this. The term became widely used after the Age of Exploration to describe these guys because of how they shaped the course of history in the New World. And the three of the main ones are Cortez, who we're going to talk about today, Pizarro, and De Soto. Those are the three main conquistadors. There's more than them, obviously. Cabral, right? Francisco Vasquez Coronado. There's other ones, but I feel like these three really kind of embody.
Those are probably the ones, if you're reading the textbooks, like there's a bunch of other ones, like Balboa, no relation to Rocky, right? There's Orella. Yeah, there's a bunch of other ones, obviously, but these are probably the ones that you're going to most hear about because they had they all had impact. They have extreme impact.
Yeah. So before we get into these three guys, what really gives rise to the conquistadors during this age of exploration, 14th, 15th, 16th century, and one of the first major things is technological advancements, right? You have the development of much more seaworthy ships.
They can actually survive the journey, which is big. It's a big deal. That's going to help a little bit.
Yeah, they could actually stay at sea longer, which is a big key. The other thing is the desire for wealth and glory, which we kind of briefly touched upon. European countries, particularly Spain and Portugal, sought new trade routes. They want to find these lucrative markets in Asia. So additionally, there's rumors of vast riches and treasures in this new world that eventually brings them to the new world. But initially, they're going west to try to get to the east. And then once the new world is found, you know, now you have these rumors of these kingdoms that are found, these natives and these treasures. And this kind of fuels the desire for exploration and more conquest. Then there's the idea of Christianity, religious fever almost plays a significant role in motivating these explorers.
Well, the church is going to help fund a lot of these too, because they want to spread the Catholic religion. They see these other religions, these other people as heathens, right? They need to save their souls. That's what they're going to say anyway. But really, they want to expand their power as well, to expand their faith, and they're going to pay these conquistadors to do it, and they're going to do it.
The other thing is too is the obvious one here. Many conquistadors were attracted by the possibility of obtaining land and titles, not just in a new world, but they thought by making a name for themselves and bringing riches back to Spain or Portugal, the crown would actually reward them for their services by granting them land and titles. You know, then you also have a lot of I would say surge of soldiers and adventurers that are just kind of like, let's see what we could do out of it.
Soldiers of fortune. They're just going to go.
Curiosity.
Yeah, they need something to do. Well, not more than they need something to do, but they're looking to make a living, looking to make money, and their best skill that they have is being able to kill people.
Right. So one of the most famous of them all is, I would say probably one of the most successful, is Cortez. So I think that's really kind of what I would say the Age of Conquistadors, probably starts with Cortez.
Starts when he's probably the one that people, when they think of conquistadors, they think of Cortez, I would think. That's probably one of the first ones that are going to pop up, particularly in North America, that's going to pop up in their people's minds.
Yeah, like if you study it, just the history of the Americas. All right, so what do we know about Hernan Cortez?
Well, he was, like we said before, he was a Spanish conquistador, right? He's best known. What we're going to talk about is he conquers the Aztecs and he claims Mexico for Spain, right? So basically, he comes over in 1519. He was sent to command his own expedition to Mexico when it was actually canceled. But Cortez ignores these orders and he travels to Mexico anyway. And when he's there, he sets his sights on overthrowing the Aztec capital. The Aztecs are known at this point. It's not like there's like a surprise encounter. Cortez knows about the Aztecs, but the Aztecs also know about Cortez after he lands, because he's laying siege to a lot of the other tribes and stuff in the area. Mm-hmm. Because you gotta remember, the Aztecs were not liked by a lot of these other tribes. So a lot of them were like telling them, oh, if you like our gold, right, just keep on going this way. You're going to get to like the Aztecs. They have a lot more. And that's basically what Cortez does. And so Montezuma II actually allows Cortez to enter the capital, right? What's the capital called?
Well, he lands with armed 500 men, 11 ships. Men.
Yeah. Yep. So he's showing overwhelming force. Obviously, there are 11 ships. He has a few cannons. These are things that they were never there. So he won a lot of these early battles with the natives in the region. Wins a native woman, right?
Yep. Her name was Marina. Marina.
Yeah. And that would become his mistress. And he had a son with her. And he's marching towards...
They said it was the first child of a European born in a new world. Obviously, that's a claim, but who...
It's a claim. But I mean, it's maybe one of the first, right? But he's marching towards the capital of Tenochtitlan. And he actually makes allies... some of the locals. He's committing a lot of massacres. So he was known to the Aztecs, like I said before, and he's actually welcomed in by Montezuma II because he wanted to better understand his enemy. It doesn't really work out that way because it kind of backfires. He invites Cortez in to kind of just like understand him and stuff like that. And Cortez pretty much just, and his men, they just like massacre the Aztec nobles and they hold themselves up in the city. They take Montezuma hostage. It's a very European tactic, right? Like take the king hostage and then ransom him. And that didn't really work in the New World quite like that. So they take him hostage. But the people of Tenochtitlan are so angry at Montezuma for this happening that they actually kill him himself. He's stoned to death.
Yeah, they're upset that
people.
He let this happen.
They let this happen. Like, you're not a leader. You're an idiot. His own people kill him. And then the conquistadors had to make like a hasty mistake. There's a lot of them. I think there was like a documentary about this pretty recently about like the conquistadors like in Cortez like leaving in the middle of the night, like barely getting out with their lives. In 1519, now he comes back in 1521 and they besiege the city. And by this point, starvation disease, really particularly disease like measles, smallpox, is just running rampant through the city, and the city was destroyed. It's actually met by the people or the natives in that area that weren't Aztec were actually excited. They were delighted. They were happy.
Yeah, well,
the Aztecs were killed off.
Well, think about it. The Aztecs actually ruled when Cortez first got there, right? The Aztecs ruled over 500 smaller tribes and states. That's like 6 million people the Aztecs ruled over. So these people felt like they were subjugated by the Aztecs. So
They saw Cortez at that point as a liberator.
Yep.
We're not saying what Cortez was good. We're not saying he was liberated, but we're saying this is what these other natives in the area actually saw him as. We noticed from their writings because they hated the Aztecs so much. For all they knew, that was their history. It was generations of Aztec control.
And people believe that Montezuma allowed Cortez in 1519 because he actually thought they were like envoys from God. Because he like prophesied the return in that year, right? And he asked the calendar that he was going to come back. So he treated him as this honored guest because he believed Cortez, with his fair skin, was this god, you know, but obviously they raided the city afterwards. I think the way they killed him, didn't they like stone him or something?
Yeah, so yeah, they stone him to death.
Yeah.
They stone Montezuma to death.
And what's interesting too is when Cortez winds up sailing to Mexico, which he was told specifically not to do when he took this 11 ships and went. So he was actually called a criminal. He was given a status of a criminal.
Yeah, but what happened is he becomes so rich, exactly. Right? Because of this, they're like, well, he can't be a criminal anymore. He becomes a marquis.
Yep.
Like, which is basically like a governor, right? An appointed governor of that area, right?
Nuts.
So because he becomes famous, like when news gets back and the amount of money that he makes from doing this, like you can't quantify it because he has all this Aztec gold now, which is just going to make him wealthy. He becomes unimaginably wealthy is what I kept on reading when all doing the research. So he creates massive wealth. They're like, well, you're so rich, you can't be a criminal. We're going to forget about you disobeying orders because look at all the gold you're basically bringing back. And that's what Cortez gambled on, right? Like he knew that. He's like, they're going to tell me no, but if I go there and I can be successful. Being successful as, you know, killing thousands of people and overthrowing a civilization. But if I can do that, I'm gonna reap the spoils. I'm going to have all this money. I won't be a criminal anymore. And basically, he was dead either way because if he got brought back to Spain, he could have been killed, right?
Yeah.
Or he could have got killed by the Aztecs. So he just took that gamble. And for him at that point, it paid off, unfortunately, for the Aztecs.
This is something that's often talked about in history, specifically when we learn about this thing. But talking about the disease, so it's not like that he was just guns that really did it. But, you know, the interaction between diseases and conquistadors played a crucial role in the outcome of overall European exploration and colonization of the Americas. One of the most significant impacts of the arrival of these conquistadors in America was introduction of these diseases to a population that had zero immunity to them. Smallpox, measles, influenza, typhus, right? Epidemics. I mean, this literally decimated the native community. So when he's going and he's invading the Aztecs, but as you mentioned, by the time he comes back again, you know, this lack of immunity and this densely populated settlements of indigenous people, it literally is just wiped out.
There's not many people to fight. The ones that are there are...
They're weak, right?
Yep. Yeah, and the ones that, you know, have... that I guess are not sick or dying, or just there's just not enough of them. 90% of the population gets wiped out. And you're going to see, this is a trend that we're going to see throughout Western expansion into the New World, right? That you see once they come in contact, when Western disease come in contact with these tribes that are really isolated from it from forever, and they get exposed to it.
Right. This, I also started reading about this, that the conquistadors quickly realized that, like, wow, all these guys are getting sick. So then they started playing that up, and a lot of them would use fear of the disease to their own advantage during these conquests. Cortez started that, and Pizarro continues. They would exploit these indigenous beliefs and superstitions, and they would claim that like these diseases were a result of divine punishment, or like they possessed magical powers that they would unleash illness on their enemies. So they started catching on. They're like, oh, all right, these guys are dying from something, so we're just going to use this against them. And this really leads to psychological warfare that further contributes to intimidation. And subjugation of these people. And obviously leads to economic exploitation. I mean, we're talking before, right? Forced labor, extraction of valuable resources such as gold, silver, and other precious metals is really because the conquistadors are able to take these weakened indigenous populations and force them into labor. Very labor-intensive industries are established by these conquistadors, like mines and plantations and so on and so forth. But eventually what this does is the mass mortality, you know, I'm kind of getting ahead of myself, but like it caused by the disease rather, results in such a significant demographic shift in America that now you need more European settlers, you need indentured servants, you need African slaves, you know, to try to upkeep what these guys initially started in areas such as Mexico and Brazil, you know, even Honduras, because Cortez...
That's where Cortez goes after, yeah. He just wants to keep on conquering more. And he actually spends his later years like trying to get recognition for all his achievements. He's saying he's not getting... The legacy that he wants. So you can see like how power hungry he is, right? He's already has all this gold, all this money. He already has a cemented legacy, but he wants even more. And like, you know, you can say he got it. I mean, this guy dies in 1547 and you know, it's 2023 and his name is still well known. It's still talked about. You know, you can't talk about the history of the New World without talking about Cortez.
All right, so let's move on to our next guy, our next big conquistador, an explorer, a soldier, a conquistador, basically known for conquering the Incas. And this is Francisco Pizarro. And he does this, first of all, as a soldier, he serves on the 1513 expedition of Balboa, as you mentioned before, a much different explorer who discovered the Pacific Ocean.
Yes, well, Balboa also went because Adrian told him to. That was a big thing. He was only he didn't go for Spain. He went for he did it for Adrian.
And he found turtles, obviously. Yeah. Turtles, you know that? You know Sylvester Stallone still has those turtles.
A cuff and link.
No, he really does. He still has them. So there was just I just read an article that the turtles he had in the original Rocky movie, he sees a picture with them. Like they're still alive. I mean, turtles live a long time. They're there.
There you go. There you go. Way to get off topic, Peter. Good job.
Well, you started it. All right.
Not at all. I'm just saying.
Francisco Pizarro, born 1474 in Spain. His father was a captain, Gonzalo Pizarro, but a poor farmer nonetheless. Mom also low birth. This guy really grew up poor. No question about it. However, very much from a young age, very excited about exploring tales of adventure, so on and so forth. Joins 300 settlers in 1510 to establish a colony on South American coast, one of the first ones, San Sebastian, or today's Colombia. Food supplies were low. Colony is basically abandoned by its leader. Pizarro is left in charge as a young man.
Pretty much left to die. They didn't expect anyone. Most of the people did die, right? Only 100 of them. Only 100 of the original 300 settlers survived, just again, from diseases, from the heat in their new home. They didn't really know what they were doing there. And but he
goes back.
He survived. He goes back and meets up with Balboa.
Yep, meets Balboa, and he goes back on new adventures. And basically, from that point forward, you know, that's kind of where he gets the bug of becoming, I guess, a conquistador. All right, so he served as a captain for Balboa on his trip. We were during the first, you know, European to discover the Pacific Ocean. That's 513.
Yeah, he becomes the mayor of Panama. So he gets wealthy. He's already wealthy before he goes on his own adventures, I guess you want to say, right? So that's what happens. You see a lot with these guys. They obtain their goal. They obtain that, but they don't have that glory. They don't want to be a footnote in history. They want their own claims, right? Yeah. They're seeing how other people are getting claims, so they want their own piece of the pie. And that's what he does here. He wants to make his own discovery so that he actually goes out, tries to conquest down the coast of South America.
Yeah.
His first couple fail. Until he arrives in Peru.
Doesn't Balboa get killed? They wind up settling in Panama because that's where they settle. Mm-hmm. He's executed on January 15th in 1519. They said that he was arrested.
It was a dangerous business without doubt.
Well, because they got this colony, right? So trying to maintain control of the territory in Panama was kind of hard. So they discovered that very quickly. So he wound up being embroiled in a conflict with a Spanish governor of the entire region. And then the Spanish governor that was given claim by the king to stay there, kind of saw Balboa as like a potential threat to his authority. So he arrests Balboa in 1519 on these like trumped up charges of treason and disloyalty to the Spanish. Fake trial really is held. He's found guilty. Balboa is sentenced to death. Boom. He is beheaded at the age of 42. And from that point forward, that's when you have Pizarro kind of takes over. And Pizarro's like, yeah, I'm not really staying here either.
Yeah, he doesn't want the same fate that happened to him. So he's starting to do his own thing, eventually arrive in Peru. And he heard about great rulers and riches in the mountains, and he gets permission to claim land there for Spain. King Charles of Spain said, listen, you know, you go there, I'll make you the governor of any lands that you conquer. So that's Pizarro. Yes. This is Pizarro's chance.
And Pizarro does this with a fellow soldier, kind of like a partner, Diego Almagro. Almagro winds up kind of plays a part here later on. So they wind up, you know, King Charles of Spain agrees to Pizarro's request that you could, you know, whatever you find to be the governor, as you said. So Pizarro and his crew in 1531, and his crew includes actually his three half-brothers, Gonzalo, Hernando, and Juan Pizarro. They sail from Panama to Peru. When they enter an Incan city in 1532, he actually gets there during these
end of the Incan Civil War, for the most part, right?
Exactly.
There's actually celebrations going on because Atahualpa, he was their leader. He just won the Civil War over his brother, right? Incan Civil War is what it basically becomes known as. And Pizarro does what, same thing like Cortez did. He takes him hostage, right? Takes him hostage, receives a ransom to spare his life, and then kills him anyway in 1533.
Did you see how the ransom worked, though? So they took this, the leader, Inca leader, they put him in a room. And what they said was, all right, if you fill this room with gold, it was a 22 by 17 feet room. And they were like, all right, we're going to hold him for ransom here. And if you fill this room with gold, then we're going to let him out. So that's what the Spanish demands was, right?
And that's what they did. They filled the room with gold. They're like,
to the ceiling. They wanted to the ceiling.
And they're like, if they have this much gold, that they can do this.
Exactly.
So how much do they have?
This is where Pizarro's second in command, Diego de Almagro, comes in, because he's the one that is kind of greedy here. And he's like, wait, if they have all this gold, you know what? Just forget this. So he winds up executing the Inca king. It wasn't Pizarro that did it. It was Almagro. And then Pizarro winds up ruling the area. Almagro becomes the governor of nearby town of New Toledo. Obviously, no.
Yeah, so during his, he's during his time, Pizarro also conquers Cusco, which is another important Incan city, and he creates the city of Lima, which is now the capital of Peru. So this is kind of, you know, creating all that history there. So while he's doing that, his former partner, and they're going to come into conflict with each other now.
Because he's like, here you go, you could have your own governorship here while I stay here. But what ends up happening, they're disputing over the limits of their territory because they're so close. Like, wait, whose territory belongs to who? And it's kind of interesting because they both stole this territory. And Pizarro granted this to Almagro, but Almagro's like, well, I want more. So Pizarro goes to war with Almagro, and he winds up basically taking Almagro in and having him executed.
Pizarro's too old to be doing this himself, so he sends his brothers to basically do it, right?
Yep.
That's what I was reading, like his half-brothers were the ones basically doing it.
Yep.
And they succeed in act because they didn't want Almagro to have the city, and they actually defeat him and they kill him. But then in retaliation, supporters of Almagro break into Pizarro's palace in Lima, right? The city that he founded, and they assassinate him. In June of 1541. So,
do you know who the main guy is that actually assassinates him? Almagro's son that actually kills
him. He gets revenge
for his father. Ta da!
Well, yeah. He would be a supporter of his father. Yes, you would think so.
So, yeah, that pretty much ends that, right? So now we have.
He's dead. But again, his legacy is still there. He creates the capital of Peru today and the beginning of the Spanish settlement in Peru.
The next guy that we have here is Hernando de Soto, 16th century Spanish explorer. De Soto arrived in West Indies. He kind of tries to make a name for himself and make money, really, through the slave trade. That's what he starts with. He initially supplies ships for Francisco Pizarro's southward expedition that, you know, winds up getting him to Peru. But then he seeks his own glory and riches. So De Soto embarks on a major expedition of his own around the same time in 1538. And he goes to North America. He actually conquers Florida.
Parts of Florida,
and claims it for the Spanish crown.
Yeah, claims out to the crown, which is going to create ripple effects all the way to like the America, right? The 1800s with Andrew Jackson and stuff like that.
This guy goes in and basically, first of all, he gets in, but they get in about 4,000 miles into the region.
They actually get as far as Mississippi River, right?
Yep. And they fight. And basically, this is where Native Americans are like, who are these people? And, you know, you have the beginning of, as you mentioned, issues with Native Americans and white population. This is kind of the beginning of that. Also, same thing, not really born into super a lot of money, but he was born as a minor nobility, modest means, but you know, so on and so forth. Developed dreams of making a fortune in the New World. Around the age of 14, he winds up leaving his hometown, and he gets himself included on his first expedition to the West Indies in 1514. So a lot of these guys start off as young people, go into the New World before they kind of decide they're going to make this their own.
And he did a lot of, De Soto worked a lot with Pizarro at first in Peru.
Yep.
That's why he made a lot of his early money that he used to fund his expeditions later to Florida. I'm just saying they're all basically connected somehow.
So he acts as Pizarro's chief lieutenant in the conquest of Peru. De Soto becomes the first European to make contact with the Inca emperor. He's the one that kind of gets that things going. Yeah. Obviously, that's before the leader is captured. Eventually, he's captured and killed. Pizarro kind of gets his new capital of Lima in 1535, takes over the Incas. De Soto winds up in 1536, returning to Spain as one of the wealthiest conquistadors of his entire era.
He got a huge fortune. Some of that room for gold that they filled up to save the Incan king, he got his portion of that. So he was good for life. That's just crazy when I'm looking at some of this. These guys, a lot of these guys could have retired right then and there, but they don't. They want more, right? They want more. It's not good enough.
Well, yeah. Well, when he comes back to Spain, he winds up getting a royal commission to go back and conquer and resettle the region he initially invaded. So La Florida, basically, you know, southeastern United States. It wasn't just our Florida. We're talking like southeast. He also receives the governorship of Cuba. So he's like, all right, cool. I'm getting all these things because I'm rich. So why not? So he winds up going back to North America. He sets sail from Spain in April of 1538, this time with 10 ships and 700 men. And they initially stop in Cuba, but then after that, they continue up and they wind up landing in Tampa Bay in May of 1539. And then wind up moving inland, settling, and eventually setting up camp for winter in a small Indian village near today, Tallahassee. I mean, this guy goes through Georgia, Carolina, Tennessee.
Yeah. Like you said, it's not just to Florida that like we know. It's that whole, the whole area basically. That, yeah, like I said, he went as far as Mississippi. He's the first European to ever cross the Mississippi River. So him and his men. Like,
but they were PO'd. First of all, same thing. So they wound up getting indigenous Americans, right? They wound up using them as guides, enslaving them, and then they quickly realized that these guys are dying on them. So they're enslaving more as they're going along. But as they're going through the southeastern United States, the one thing that's glaring to them, like the one thing they're getting kind of angry about, is they're not finding gold.
Yeah.
You know, like while the other conquistadors, when they went further south, South America, Mexico, Central America, they were finding gold. He's like in Alabama, literally. And he's like, I'm not finding gold, right? Kind of make it to Tennessee. He's like, forgets, we're going back, forget this. So they start headed back into Alabama, today's Alabama, into like Mobile Bay, where they're like, you know what, bring our ships over, we're out of here. And it was there that they're attacked by Native Americans that are just have been following them. They went up
tracking them. Yeah, because they realize what's going on. Yeah,
right.
These other tribes. Plus, all the tribes are just going to kill people who come into their territory anyway, especially ones who have, you know, committed massacres and enslaving other tribes. They're like, well, it's not happening to us. So they're just going to go after them. And then so the ones up getting sick, right?
Yeah, I mean, but even here, this is one of the first bloody battles North America between Europeans and Native Americans, you know, October of 1540 in present-day Mobile. So after this battle, deaths on both sides, DeSoto decides that, you know what, maybe I'm going to go and search for more treasure. Like, after this, he made it back to his ships, and he could have left,
but he's like, you know what, there might still be gold out there.
Exactly. I might have missed something. So he crosses back, turns around, and goes back into today's Arkansas and Louisiana. And by 1542, he winds up turning back to the Mississippi. He's like, I'm still not finding anything. And that's when he winds up getting sick. He gets a fever. And back then, you know, you got the sniffles and that could have been a 50-50 shot for you. So he winds up dying in May 21st, 1542, and his comrades bury his body in the Great River.
Which is Mississippi, yeah.
Yes. And his successor, Louis de Moscoso,
yes,
led the remnants of the expedition, which, by the way, only half of them made it back, on rafts. They created rafts, and they went back to Mississippi.
They went back there. They rolled the Mississippi back down to Mexico.
Yeah, they're like, we need to get out of here. Like, there's no gold here. This land sucks.
Yeah, they were not happy with Alabama and Arkansas. Well, it is. I mean, this is just, you know, the first, I won't say first people, but like some of the first Europeans to be there. And they're just saying, you know, that if this wasn't what they expected, so they leave. They didn't have those giant cities there of gold like they did in South America and in North America.
Also, this is where you get the difference where when you look at North America, you have more of French, some Spanish too, obviously, but French, Spanish, and British settle in North America. Central and South America is really...
Spanish and Portuguese, yeah.
Absolutely.
Because they were the powers at the time.
Yeah, and even like the whole idea here, Portugal leads all others in exploration of the New World because of Prince Henry, the navigator. Portuguese seamen would sail southward along the African coast seeking water route to the east. And that's really what started all this stuff. You know, we're talking like 1400s. So Portuguese always had this long interest in like distance, trade, expansion. Then you have Cabral, right? In 1500, yeah. Pedro discovers the claim, you know, claims Brazil for Portugal. You really have Portuguese and Spanish right there. And they're like, wait, us too. And that's really what kind
of... Yeah, well, these dominoes, all those areas are just falling, right? And they're just claiming. It's what you're going to see in the later half of the 1800s, right? With the scramble for Africa, right?
Yeah.
Well, the European powers trying to get parts of Africa and Asia and stuff like that to claim their colonies. Now you're seeing the beginning of it. Only the major powers here are just Spain and Portugal. They're the only two to really have the resources and the technology also to be able to do this.
And then, you know, and then obviously Columbus is the guy that kind of, I would say that he's the guy that really starts with this whole conquistador thing. But subsequent explorations, it's interesting too, because they persuaded most Europeans that Columbus had discovered a new world, right? But the new world was named for someone else instead of Columbus. Amerigo Vespucci and this German map maker, Martin Valdes Müller, I think? Valdes Müller.
Yes.
He's the one that accepted the claim by Amerigo Vespucci that Amerigo's like, well, I was there before him. He's like, okay. So he basically landed on American mainland.
Sure.
He's like, sounds good. And he named it in his new book in 1507, this German mapmaker, he named it America. and that kind of stuck. The decline of the conquistadors as a prominent force in the colonization of Americas could really be attributed to a few factors, obviously. One is consolidation of control. By mid-16th century, the Spanish and Portuguese crowns had gained significant control over American territories already. So the conquest of major civilization like the Aztecs or the Inca empires, the two major ones, right? They were kind of followed by establishment of some form of like colonial administrations that governed and exploited the resources. So there really was, there wasn't that much.
There wasn't a need for it. They wasn't necessarily conquer. You know?
Exactly. They were like, we're not going to conquer. We're just going to govern now.
And make sure there's no revolts. That's exactly what they were trying to do.
Yeah, there's this like shift in focus from seeking quick wealth to conquest and establishment to establishment of like stable colonies and trade networks. Now it's like, all right, the emphasis on exploration and discovery, like we're not going to really emphasize that anymore. Now we're already here. We took what we want. Now let's structure and govern these societies. Another thing that kind of led to the decline of conquistadors is the indigenous population really resisted the Spanish and Portuguese colonization. So it led to a lot of like guerrilla conflicts, jungle conflicts. And the conquistadors were initially very successful in overpowering the indigenous empires, but ongoing resistance and guerrilla warfare really made it expensive. It
was constant fighting. And yeah, it became expensive. And Spain and Portugal couldn't afford it anymore.
Yep. Because of Cortez and Pizarro and De Soto, because these guys had so much money and made such wealth from this, the Spanish crown really wanted to consolidate the control over these colonies and kind of prevent this unchecked power of individual conquistadors. They're like, all right, these guys made way too much money by themselves. Like, we need to kind of, you know, nip this in the bud, kind of. So it led to a lot of implementation of laws and reforms that actually specifically limited the influence of conquistadors, because the point is to strengthen royal authority. Like, these guys were supposed to do this in the name of Spain and Portugal, and they became not too wealthy.
They became, you know, in some cases almost as powerful as the king himself. And like, no, that's not the point here, you know?
Nuts. And then you have, obviously, like, you know, 1600s keeps on going, and that's another topic. But in 1600s, one of the major things that kind of leads to the end of this is that European powers such as England, France, and Netherlands really begin to challenge the Spanish and Portuguese dominance in the New World. And they're like, you know what, we're going to go check this thing out too. And while they don't land as south as Spain and Portugal, they do land in what today is North America. And now you have this competition that really kind of, you know, results in conflicts that diverted a lot of attention and resources from further exploration and expansion on the Spanish and Portuguese side. Because they're like, wait, like now these guys are getting in here. We, like, now is this competition. Like, we can't really go and explore. We need to protect what we have. So, yeah. And then, obviously, as the conquistadors took all the gold they could back to Europe, which really created massive inflation in Europe because there was so much gold all of a sudden. The other thing issue was that now there's a shift from extraction of precious metals to agricultural production, cash crops, specifically sugar. I mean, think of like, you know, think of Brazil, right? Sugar, tobacco, cotton. Like
sugar cane. Yeah, they want their sugar. They want these goods, these renewable goods, right? It's not just the minerals anymore. And that's going to create even more wealth. So that's what they're going to be focused on. And they just want to protect that with the ships coming back and forth. That's what they're going to focus on. And to do that takes a lot too, because now they have to have a powerful navy, right? To be able to to protect the lanes from pirates. That's going to give rise to the pirates, which we always keep on talking about doing a podcast on, like, you know, the Pirates of the Caribbean. We have to get to that at some point.
Yeah, definitely. That'd be awesome. All right. So that pretty much covers the conquistadors. So in case you guys are curious why they speak Portuguese and Spanish in South America, this is why they do that. Shocking, right? History, you know, everything has a beginning. Anyway, guys, thank you so much for tuning in once more. We appreciate it. If you need to find us, you can find us at www.historyteacherstalkingpodcast.com. We are there to answer any of your questions. Make sure you guys click that subscribe or like button, and make sure you guys follow us on all social media, because we are there. And I guess that's it. We'll see you guys next week.
Stay safe, everybody.
I hope everyone enjoyed our podcast, and if you would like to email us, you can do so at historyteacherspodcast@gmail.com.